Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome, third service. 12 o'clock crowd, the faithful few. Let's give it up for the band leading us in worship today. We have to start every GM service like that, as Pastor Tim normally does. I feel like the end of that video sounds like a school bell going off. It took me by surprise. I heard it all weekend. I don't know if y'all heard it, but man. I don't know, like, oh, class is in. Okay, here we go. It's been Sisterhood Weekend, as you know, this weekend, 20 years of GM Sisterhood, essentially our women's ministry here at Genesis Metro, and we celebrated all weekend. We had such a great time. I don't know of anything I've done more than 20 years, except for being married, I guess, you know? That's a long time when you start adding it up. And we had lots and lots of years of planting and plowing the field and planting seeds for God to begin bringing in the harvest. And I will tell you, in all of these 20 years, not one year has been wasted. There hasn't been one wasted year. There were things we needed along the way, and He gave them to us. There were things we needed to learn as we were walking, and we have absolutely learned every single breadth of the stretch of road that we've been on. You know, when we started Genesis Metro Church years ago, we came here because we wanted to build something for not only our generation. We were in our 20s and we were looking at the church culture we were in and saying, man, we're not reaching us. We don't see us around anywhere. The only family with a baby, and there's just not us. Where are our people? Where are they? Our generation is out here. And then we also knew we were looking at our son, Jordan, who was up here leading us in worship a few moments ago, but we were looking at him as a baby saying, what do we want for him? We want to build something for him and the kids we don't even know that we're going to have yet. And so we did that. We set out to do that at Genesis Metro. And we always say here, we invest in the next generation. Our biggest line item budget will always be the next generation, whether it's Fuse, whether it's kids, whatever, because we have a responsibility to pass on to them what God has imparted to us. One of the things that dawned on me last week, and I'm going to say it was God planting it within me, was that investing in the next generation doesn't stop when you graduate high school. But somehow we kind of let it go after that. So in forming our sisterhood groups, our discussion groups, we made them multi-generational because we've tried to keep things separate. How could 20-year-olds possibly relate to 50-year-olds and marriage problems, right? And the 50-year-olds might say, oh my goodness, why'd you put these kids in here with me? And so we knew maybe we might hear some of that. But the greater responsibility is, how do the 20-year-olds know what to do when they're in their 50s and they're having marriage problems if they've never been around anyone who struggled through marriage and found a way through because of God? How in the world can they find it unless they hear it? So we knew in going through and coming into this that this next generation thought needed to be pressed down into, or pressed up actually into, the layers of adulthood, because as Titus chapter 2 tells us, we have a responsibility to keep passing it on. So you'll see that. We had a wonderful time. I think we're gonna see lots of fruit from that. We heard many, many stories of, I've never met her, I've never even seen her. They've both been at this church for years. We heard this on multiple fronts of 20-somethings needing the advice of a 50, 60-year-old who had been through the same thing she's walking through right now. And of course, they have the wisdom and the life experience to pass it on. And so we came here to build a church for every generation, of course, but to make sure that we're always pushing that forward. These are my daughters-in-law. Look at that. I can say that. I'm a boy mom, but I have girls around now. I'm so happy. So happy. All right. Now listen, we're going to wake up, y'all. Are y'all awake? All right, and here, this is gonna be back and forth. We're gonna interact today, okay? Sisterhood will always invest in the next generation, as Genesis Metro will. We're gonna talk about Esther today. We discussed her all weekend. She's quite the character. If you've never read the book of Esther, it's 10 chapters, pretty short, but it is a crazy story with a lot of action. There's a lot of whole cast of characters to get through, and you can't skip over quickly. You gotta get in there. There's so much to dig out, which we can't possibly do in one service today. I think at one point, I think my Friday morning session, I had about 10 pages of notes, and only the ProPresenter person knows that, because I'm like, don't freak everybody out and tell them how many notes I have. But I did have to cut that in about half to get it all in. There's just a lot that's going on in the book of Esther. She becomes queen, as you see here. This crown is here to remind us that this girl, this normal girl that's just in this race in this city, becomes queen. She was an orphan, we know about her. She had no father, no mother. Her uncle raised her as his own. He became her adopted dad. And she's just a normal girl. She was beautiful. The Bible describes her beauty. And now she's wrapped up in this whole exercise of becoming queen. And she's elevated to queen. She's chosen, she's picked. And we find her, we're gonna pick up a little bit at the beginning, a little at the end, just so you can see what God did, and we'll talk about the in-between. But Esther 4:14 is the verse that really summarizes the pivotal plots of this story. Let's read it. Esther 4:14 says this, "If you keep silent," this is her uncle speaking to her, "if you keep silent, relief and deliverance will come to the Jewish people from another place." Ooh, from another place. Wonder where that is. "But you and your father's family will be destroyed." We'll come back to that. "Who knows? Who knows? Perhaps you have come to this royal position for such a time as this." Say what? "For such a time as this." Look at your friend beside you and say, "For such a time as this." It's important that you remember that. Perhaps, who knows, that God has planted you in this palace, in this position, for such a time as this. God's time is not our time. God's ways are not our ways. God's thoughts are not our thoughts. We want him to work when we want him to work, but he's like, oh no, you are sorely misunderstood. We're gonna do this my way. That's the best way we're gonna do it. And I have learned in this walk of life, as I read Esther, what I see is that we have several ingredients that make this story so good. You know, like a really good recipe. It's got the good stuff in it. Got a little rosemary, it's got some spice, got a little kick to it, sea salt, black pepper, always a staple. Just add those on. Anytime a recipe calls for stuff that's seasoning, I add way more than it calls for. It just makes it better, right, Justin? Don't you think it does? That's right. It makes it better. And that's what God does. And when he's building a story and he's trying to teach us something, he puts these ingredients in that make this story, it gives it the punch that it needs so you remember it and you don't forget it. So we have purpose and courage, a little bit of God's favor sprinkled on. And this is really where, this is like a specialty. This is a specialty. He is throwing in the things that you're going to know it was God. When we talk about the word favor, and we see that favor is a little extra on top. You know what I mean? Like, does everybody like cake? Or you like cupcakes? Or I mean, I like food. I mean, ice cream, anything, a little something, maybe a little whipped cream on top of the ice cream, maybe some Oreos crushed up on top. That's the favor of God. It's a little extra on top, right? It's the cake, it's the icing, it's the chocolate sprinkles on top of that. You don't need it, but it's nice to have. You didn't ask for it, but somebody gave you the extra help, and you get the medium blizzard and somebody gives you a large blizzard. Oh, well, forget calories today. That's the favor of God. It's the little extra you didn't earn, you didn't ask for, you didn't deserve it, and he gave it anyway. And we see a recipe coming together with all of these elements that God is going to teach us. Because Esther finds purpose. See, her purpose brought her through to the palace. Her purpose also brought her to a place to be able to save, to be able to stand before a king and find the courage to confront evil. Her purpose brought her to a place to be able to speak for her people and bring about their salvation and deliverance so that they would not be annihilated. We see her purpose is in every part of this story. I'm going to give you three things that I believe we also see that must take place in our own lives for us to be able to find ourselves standing where Esther stood. That we have to have faith and trust that God is going to do this. It takes an incredible amount of trust to have the courage to stand as the only person. It takes an incredible amount of trust to be able to say, I will do it even though I do not see how it's possible. I'll do it. It takes trust. So that's a faith. Number two, it does take favor. And number three, it does absolutely take that God is working on your behalf, sometimes in the hidden places places you cannot see. And we're going to find all three of these to be true today. So let's first take number one, faith. Faith walks into what fear warns you out of. Faith walks right into it, even though your fear has gripped you and tells you this is not a good idea. Let me say it one more time. Faith walks into, charges into what fear wants to talk you out of. I am a scaredy cat. I'm a scaredy cat. I don't like people jumping out at me. I don't like to watch things that jump out at me. I don't like to really be alone. I don't like to be alone in the dark. All the things. The last scary movie I saw was in 1997, not kidding. And I ended in a fetal position at the middle of the night because a storm came and knocked the power out. And I imagined this was happening right now. It's happening to me. This is it. I'm dead. That's it. I'm yelling Tim's name. I have a default setting that I yell my husband's name when I get scared. We don't know where this came from. Tim! And he used to get to me a lot faster, but his back, you know, he can't hardly get over there now. By the time he gets to me, it's over. I already saved myself. I don't need you anymore. Did anybody else find themselves in fear? You know, like you get scared? Sometimes for real. I'm joking. But when you get scared, when something's fearful and it's caused you, like, you get that nervousness inside, it paralyzes you. And you can't move, you can't breathe. All the air's been sucked out of the space. And you're wondering what to do next. See, faith is the only thing that can help you take a step when you're paralyzed by fear. That's our humanity mixing with this world. And if we don't have God to lean into, to reach out to, we don't have anywhere to turn. I thought of Peter in the New Testament, walking on that water. It says that a great storm came and they were out on that boat and it's just crazy, right? Crazy. We've experienced so many crazy storms here in North Texas. I know you know what I'm talking about when you're like, dang, that was close. And y'all don't know if y'all know, do you know that Frisco, Texas sits up a little higher in elevation than everything around it? Did you know that? This is why we have so many house lightning strikes. You're welcome. Little useless knowledge you can just tuck away. Next time you'll be like, I hope it's not our house tonight. One time our house did get struck by lightning, but that's another story. Okay, I've been there for that too. Storms here. Freaking out. They're freaking out. Peter, who is ever the, you know, if anybody's going to rush in, it's going to be Peter. He's that personality. He's going to figure it out. So he's out looking at the water. I just imagine him out there like, well, guys, I think the worst has passed. I don't know, guys. I can just imagine him out there like assessing the situation like he's a meteorologist. And he's looking out and he sees something in the distance, darkness, storm, waves, probably white caps at some point. He's looking out and he sees something. And he's like, I think it's Jesus, guys. And you know, they were like, Peter, shut up. You know, they were just thought, come on. So he says, hey, this is in Matthew 28. I think they'll put it up. He says, Lord, if that's you, call me to come out with you. Have me join you. And Jesus says, come on, brother, let's go. Get on out here. So he climbs out of the boat and he starts walking. And he's like, I'm doing it. Oh my goodness, I'm doing it. He's walking on the water. And as long as he has his eye on Jesus, he's fine. He's right on top of it. But it says very clearly, he starts to look around at the storm and the strength of the storm, and he instantly begins to sink. And Jesus is right there, which I'm like, how far was Jesus away when he starts to sink? And then he's right there. Miracle. He picks him up out of the water and he says, Peter, so little faith. Why do you doubt me? Why do you doubt? You wanted out of the boat. I helped you do that. And you don't trust me. We want to get out. We want God to make a way. And then when we get out there, we don't trust that he can actually do it. Isn't that so human of him? What a moment that we ourselves can relate to, because Peter's faith wasn't perfect, but at least it was bold enough to try. And I wonder if anybody else feels that dichotomy inside of you, that two people exist at the same time. You have all this fear and you have a faith. You do believe God. You do see that he can do it, but you also, you're among the doubters. I mean, I don't know. I've seen you do it for them. I haven't seen you do it for me. It's a really big thing. Like, I understand you're busy, not trying to inconvenience you. We often treat our prayers that way. Don't we often treat God like, this might be too big. There's no way he can see it. There's no way he can do it. Both things exist inside of us, and it's up to us to contend with that and find ourselves getting stronger in faith, which only happens if you practice it. It only happens if you find yourselves in situations that you could not possibly get yourself out of, but somehow God makes a way because you've learned to trust or obey and you decided, I'm going to follow him this time, and then he does the thing. That makes you more of a believer. That puts more trust in him. So the next time, you're going to be a lot quicker to respond to, oh, I remember what to do because he did it last time. I'll do that formula, and now I'm better, stronger, faster at what God is doing. You can give God some praise for that. That's how he builds you up. That's how he builds your faith. So when you feel the pressure at work, you can know you look to God. When you feel the pressure at home, when the bills aren't quite stretching, you look to God. When your marriage seems cold and distant and you're not on the same page, you look to God. When your kids seem to be so far out, you can't reach them anymore, they want nothing to do with you, you look to God, because they will turn around at some point. If you keep looking to God and you set your sails for your home at Jesus, he will show up and your faith will be grown in ways you never imagined. Number two, favor finds the faithful. Favor, which we already talked about, it's just a little extra, just a little bit more than you ever needed or asked for or wanted. Ephesians 3:20 speaks to it. And what we see about Esther is there's great risk involved, right? There's great risk involved with what she was asked to do. We see that she had to go before a king who was very particular about how he wanted anyone to approach him. Now, just so you know, because we don't have time to read it, but you're not allowed to approach the king's room or the like the courtyard outside, which would have been like palace gardens that sat outside adjacent to his like inner throne room. No one was even allowed out there if he didn't ask them or summon them to come and see him. So now she's in a position where her uncle is saying the only way that our people can be saved, because this awful evil guy Haman has decided we should all be killed, because just simply we are of Jewish descent, all of us will be slaughtered in a matter of months on a certain day that's already been set aside. It's become a law. And you, perhaps, who knows that you're in such a position as this, right? That's what he says. Maybe you've come to this position for such a time as this. So she has to muster up this courage to go before a king who could quickly say, kill her. She's not allowed. I didn't ask her to come here. That's what he would do. Can you just imagine having this power? Go away. Flee. Get away from my presence. So she's terrified, because you don't know what happened to the first queen that just took place a short time before this. Is she didn't do what the king wanted one night, and he said, you're out. And they made a law and banished her from the kingdom, essentially wrote letters to everybody. A very vast kingdom all the way from Turkey to Ethiopia were the borders. Vast Persian kingdom, Persian king. He's outed this lady. Now, this little queen, this little young queen, she's like, you want me to go to that guy? That guy who has no patience. He has zero cares for any reason why you're not doing what he wants. You want me to go before him and ask? You know, when you have God's favor, he can give you influence you never thought possible. He can give you impact. He can make you effective. He can make you be able to speak. He can make you be able to run. He can make you be able to walk again. He can do the things you don't think you can do. That's the favor of God. And what we see is that really God honors those who are risk takers in order to find revelation. He honors those who will take a risk to find a new revelation. And I've seen that over and over in scripture. Many of us like the safety of a plan. We like the safety of sameness. We like the stability that it brings when there's no change. and there's no out the box, and no one's trying to upset the apple cart, and we all just do what we're supposed to do, and nobody, some of us like that safety. Sometimes God is asking you to step on out. I thought of Jonathan and his armor bearer back in 1 Samuel. Now, this is David's right-hand man. David would become king. This is his pre-king days, and this is his right-hand man, Jonathan, and Jonathan is a go-getter. Jonathan is also a warrior. So David's in his warrior days. Jonathan is right along with him. And Jonathan, they're all fighting the Philistines. That's their enemy at the time. And Jonathan is like ready to go. He's like a racehorse in the gate that they're holding back. And as soon as they release that, he's going to run out. And he climbs up, says, to the edge of this outlook. And he can look down into the valley and see the Philistine army. And he's got his little guy with him that handles all his equipment, his armor bearer. And he's like, hey, you see those guys down there? Let's go get them. You want to? Let's go get them. It says it right there in 1 Samuel 14:6. He says, he asked him, come on, let's go over and let's go find these uncircumcised men, which was a huge insult. I won't get into today. I'll let Pastor Tim cover that topic another time. But perhaps, he says, perhaps the Lord will act on our behalf. Perhaps the Lord would act on our behalf because what? Nothing can hinder the Lord from saving. Look what it says, whether by many or by few. This guy is ready to go. This is a gladiator, brave heart moment. Anybody seen that? Above 35, have you seen it? Okay, there we go. You know what I mean? That like, I always think of Chronicles of Narnia, for Aslan. It's that type of moment, right? It's like, yes, we're going to do it. Now it's just the two of them. I think, what in the world? And they climb up there. And then he goes on to explain. We're not going to read all the verses, but he goes on to explain. Listen, here's what we're going to do. He looks at this armor bearer. We're going to stand up and get their attention. Well, we've just lost the element of surprise in case you don't know. That's not what you want. We're going to get their attention. And then when they see us, if they run at us to come get us, we're going to run because we're going to know God is not with us. But if we stand up and get their attention and they say, oh, come on down. How big a boy are you? Let's go. Let's fight it out. And then he said, that's when we're going to know we can run at them because God has delivered them into our hand. And I just always want to know, what's the armor bearer thinking? Like, how do you know this is going to work? But it does. They defeat them. The two of them slaughter every single one of them. Gone. Now you look at the faith it took, but you look at the favor of God. When you have the favor of God because you have taken the time and lived through the years of faith building. See, his favor finds the faithful. His favor finds you because you've chosen to stay the course, even though many would try to pull you off and distract you. But we see risk-taking sometimes opens the door to revelation because you know why? It was only God that could do it. There's no way in your strength and your gifts and your skill set and everything you've developed and your leadership and all of that means nothing when it comes to revelation and when it comes to what God wants for your life. He is the reason we have these. When you're talking about, you know, what risk will you take even in your own home, even with your job, when God says, step out, do something, say something. Don't let that sit. Will you take a stand? When your faith is called into question, when morality is on the line, do you take the risk to be the one voice saying, wait a minute, we can't do that? Or are you scared and you shrink back? And you say, I'm gonna stay over here. Somebody else will say it. When you see your kids floating off because someone else is shaping their worldview, if you aren't shaping their worldview, someone is. If it's not coming from you, it's coming from somewhere. So do you want them to know when they graduate high school that the Bible informs us of where we should stand on morality, where we should stand on values, where we should stand for Him, where we should stand when these big topics come up in culture, and they do, and they will, and they are. Do your kids know where to stand? I'm not saying we're trying to create a bunch of political junkies. What I'm saying is the Bible is the informer for all of our values, for all of our tenets, for every way that we walk in life. If you're not helping shape that for your own children, someone else will. So are you risking even being liked by your kids to say, hang on, I heard you talking. Sometimes you hear it when they're on the phone. Sometimes you hear it with all your video games. Sometimes you hear it when their friends are over and you're like, I'm gonna make a note of that and talk about that later. I don't think so. Step into it, take a risk, because it's worth it for you to save their souls and make sure they know the hand of God on their lives to shape them. Number three is heaven's hand moves in the hidden places. In the book of Esther, God's name is not mentioned one time, not one time in the whole entire book, but he's there. We can see him. We can hear him. We can feel him. We see the evidence of him working. And sometimes that's us. Oh man, it's been a minute since I said his name. I called out to him. It's been a minute since I worshiped. It's been a minute. But does it mean that he's not there? That he doesn't see? That he doesn't hear? That he doesn't orchestrate things? And that's where, when I get into the hidden hand of God, when I know I cannot control an outcome, I'm a control freak. Is anybody else? We're all being vulnerable here today. Just me? There we go. Okay. When I know I cannot control the outcomes, I have to trust the orchestrator. I have to trust the great conductor of this whole thing who knows this much better than I do. If we're talking about an orchestra, he knows when the strings come in. He knows when they go out. He knows who's introducing it. He knows what the horns need to do. He knows what key it's in. He knows what time signature. He knows what tempo. He knows when the key is going to change. He knows when it's going to drop. He knows when we're going to speed up. He knows when we're going to slow down. He's the great orchestra of all these things. My part is to follow in my part and allow him to work, not to take it back. It's also not my part to make sure everyone else is doing their part. That's none of my business. Whatever God's doing with them, that's what the orchestrator does. That's not what the one stringed instrument does. No, that's what the orchestrator does. I have to trust that my God, he has it. And it's not my business to make sure everyone else knows that. I think of when the king can't sleep, and you'll find this if you go read Esther, you know what? The great orchestrator is there to open a book just at the right page to make sure he hears the right story to then pour out the right favor to make a way for the people to be saved. That's literally how it happens. And we only see that. We only see that sometimes because we're looking through this tiny little hole and we're missing the big picture. I thought back to Moses and I thought about his mom putting him in that basket. If you remember baby Moses, baby, was like 3 months old. It says that all the baby boys in that time were instructed to be killed. So they would go around the cities on a daily basis, a roundup, and take babies from their mothers and kill them. And this mom, it says she had successfully hidden him for 3 months in her house. And now she didn't think she could keep hiding him. So she had to come up with a plan to keep him safe, which was she was gonna have to let him go in order to keep him. Do you see that? We have to let go in order to keep what God's given. We have to let go in order to keep some reservation of what God has given us. And this is what she does. She puts him in this basket. She sets it all up. Let's read a little bit about it in Exodus chapter 2. It says, now a man from the family of Levi married a Levi woman. This is them, his parents. The woman became pregnant. She gave birth to a son. It's Moses. And she saw that he was beautiful. Every mother thinks their baby's beautiful, so sweet. She hid him for 3 months. Not all babies are beautiful. That was just an aside. Yes, they are. I'm kidding. Come on. Verse 3, but when she could no longer hide him, she got a basket, papyrus basket, coated it with asphalt and pitch. That was to make it more buoyant, all right? So she's reinforcing this basket to make sure that when she lets this baby go, he's not going to drown in the water and she can't get to him in time. So she's making sure the first step is taken care of. What a productive mom this is. She's being very proactive to be sure that she takes care of it. She placed the child in it. She set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And then his sister, Miriam, love her, she stood at a distance in order to see what would happen. And it says Pharaoh's daughter went down to bathe at the Nile. So they're near Pharaoh's palace. also strategic. The daughter comes out. She finds a basket by the riverbank with a baby in it. I imagine she runs home like, I found a puppy. Can I keep it? Can I keep it? Can I keep it? And she asks her dad, the Pharaoh, can I keep this baby I found? I've always wanted a baby. How wonderful that I found a baby. And he says, sure, you can keep it. I don't care. And then Miriam is close by, the sister. And she says, would you like me to find one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you until he's old enough so you don't have to worry about that? She said, yes, that would be so helpful. Thank you. And that baby is back home in his mother's arms before the day ends. Come on, let's give God some praise for that. She had to let go to keep him safe. And what we see is his future was preserved. His purpose was preserved. You remember Moses is the one that led them out, all the Israelites. His life is an entire story we could spend years studying. But his faith and his purpose and calling was preserved that day because of a mom who said, what do I need to do to be sure this child lives past this moment in history? And I just wonder if you've ever been in a place where you were wondering what would happen. How can I fix this? How can I control it? I want to tell you, I didn't tell this in either of the other, but third service always gets a little more, right? Our older sons, Jordan and Titus, were once kids, right? And they were in high school and middle school, and they were all into sports. Silas III, who was on drums today, was all into theater and arts, very different kind of kid. But these two, they were into sports. Jordan was really into football. Titus was really into basketball. I think that he still thinks he can do it. What do you think, guys? He still thinks. Come on now. And they both of them, I really can't tell one without the other. Different circumstances, but I will tell you now, watching them as adults, I know, looking back, there was a pivotal moment for both of them when God removed them from contact sports and put them on a different path. He removed them. At the time, we didn't realize that's what was happening. Jordan had an injury. He was a starter. He was just always thinking, I don't care. And he was an animal out there. I don't care. I just want to be in the NFL. And at some point, Tim is an honest dad. He's like, listen, I'm sorry to tell you, your mother's DNA has mixed in with mine, and you are short. You will not be a linebacker in the NFL. I'm so sorry. You could blame her. You know, it was like we would make jokes. But Tim would try to, like, keep his feet on the ground. Like, I know you want to play in the NFL, but it's probably not going to happen. You're good. You're doing great. You're an animal. But I'm just saying, man, the size is not in your favor. Well, he got injured his sophomore year, and then he came back from that. Well, he got sick. He came back from that illness, which was a mono. It was a long illness. He came back for spring football, and he got injured immediately and had to have surgery. That took him out of spring football. He was at Lone Star. They had just been the state champion the year before, so he was all into that. And by the end of the summer, he comes back for summer workouts. He comes home from the first day of summer workouts, and he said, I'm done with football. I don't love it anymore. I just want to learn instruments. What? Okay. I didn't want him to quit. I was all into it. I was into the football mom thing. Tim had to pull me aside and be like, hey, man, you got to calm down about the football thing. He ain't into it. You're way more into it than he is. I had to work that out with God. I'm like, yeah, but he's giving a look. He's, Titus comes along. This is the summer after Jordan's sophomore year. Titus comes along. Now, Titus's thing was a lot different, but by the end of his sophomore year, playing basketball at Lone Star, he had six concussions. Five, six, I don't remember now. Six, seven, I mean, it just opens itself up for me. I can't help it anymore. He has a lot of concussions. And Frisco ISD says, hey, I'm so sorry, Titus Bourne, but you're not allowed to play contact sports for us anymore because you have too many concussions. This is why people retire from the NFL. You can't do it. You can't. You can play basketball somewhere else, but you can't play for us. Oh, he was mad. He wasn't a willing participant in this exercise. It took him a while. It was everything he wanted. But God shut that down and put him on a different path. It was about a year before he basically said he let God have the reins. Now, as a parent, I'm just watching a brooding teenager who's mad at the world. I don't know by watching him that he's contending with God. But he was contending with God. He tells it now. And now I understand what God did was take both of them from the path they thought they were on and put them on a different path because he had a different future than they imagined. But they knew that was available because we had positioned them to know the voice of God. And we had told them, whatever happens in your life, whatever you do, that is the most important thing. Nothing else matters if you don't have that right. And now they're serving God, working for him, passionate about their next generation, passionate about what God's doing. And I'm not saying that to hype our family up. I'm saying we are just one family who said God is first. That is it. Nothing else matters. I did have to grieve, but I trusted God. Let's give it up for what God can do, even in one family. Purpose requires preparation is the last I'll close with. When you want it to happen faster and you wish it was happening today, you have to remember that there's no skipping the years of waiting. There's no skipping through and making it go faster. Because in the waiting is when you start to learn. And the waiting is when God grows your spiritual grit. And the waiting is when you learn patience. And the waiting is when you learn, when you do get distracted, to refocus your eyes on him. And if you skip all of that, you skip all the in-between. And what looks like waiting is often God training you for what he has. As I said, we planted this church 23 years ago, and we thought it was going to be a lot faster process than it actually was. We were in our home for a couple of years. 2 years after moving here, we moved into an elementary school. We did that for 7.5 years, set up and tear down, band, children's, babies. The worst was when we would get a call that the children's trailer was stolen in the night. You have nothing. We'd be calling it, bring your wipes, bring your walkers, bring whatever you got for a baby. We got to keep babies today with nothing. But there were years of that. Then we found a plumbing supply warehouse that we renovated on the back 40 that nobody would find unless they were going to it. You didn't just happen upon it back there. And we were there for 12 years where God grew us and shaped us. And in that time, we never had enough money, never had enough people. But we treated every year like it was the most important year of our lives. We treated every retreat, every conference, every Fuse Wednesday night, every Fuse camp, every kids camp, every extreme camp, every communion, everything we ever do like it was the most important thing we've ever done, because it was for those people in that room at that time. We built an orphanage in Honduras. We did not have the resources, but God laid it on our heart to make sure we were not just about Genesis Metro. We were about the kingdom. So we were sowing seeds that would never return for us. And that orphanage is up and running today, and it is saving kids down in Honduras off the side of a mountain that our church literally built with our hands. And God, come on. God is about the waiting. He's about that. Because if we had our way, we would have moved here. We would have had this thing open in a couple of years. And we'd be going. And at some point, Tim and I had to look at each other and be like, this is going to take a while. I'm in. Are you in? I mean, are you good? Are we good? This might take a minute. And we postured ourselves to say, whatever, however long it takes, whatever it takes, literally as a family, we will do it because we believe. And I will tell you the things that we learned along the way, the win is on the other side of waiting. That's where the win is. It's when you look back and you realize, oh man, there's no way we could have done that. Only God can do that. I want you to look at how Esther ends. And what happens and where they're at. All the redeeming has been done. All the saving has been done. All the deliverance has been done. God has shown up in every way by everything that I just mentioned. And it says in chapter 9, 23, so the Jews agreed to continue the celebration. They had a celebration once it was all over. They agreed to continue it, doing what Mordecai had written to them. For Haman, that's the evil guy, son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the enemy of all the Jews, he's the bad guy, had plotted against the Jews to destroy them and had cast the pur, that is the lot, basically for their ruin and destruction. But when the plot came to the king's attention, which, remember, by the way, was by Queen Esther. When that came to his attention, he issued written orders that the evil scheme Haman had devised against the Jews should come back on his own head. So actually, what you don't know is the gallows he built to kill Mordecai on, they actually killed him on the next morning. Oh, justice. Just saying, you can never outdo God's own Old Testament justice is what I call that. Verse 26, therefore, these days were called Purim. Remember? Haman. What? He cast the pur. Now we're going to, even the celebration of the thing that God did is going to be the opposite of what the enemy intended. I love it. Because everything written in this letter and because of what they had seen and what had happened to them, the Jews took it on themselves. The Jews took it on themselves to establish this custom that they and their descendants and all who joined them should without fail observe these 2 days every year in the way prescribed and appointed. And what we see is that they still celebrate this today. They still celebrate. Like we come in here and we celebrate and we worship and we sing of God. They do that once a year to remember what God did in the book of Esther to preserve his remnant, to make sure his people were not annihilated. That's who our God is. The win is on the other side of waiting. And if he has purposed you for a very specific purpose, he will bring it about. You have to show up and trust. Let's pray to our God today. God, thank you for all that you do. Thank you that there is no season that you are not in. There is no season that you are not around us, in us, beside us, before us, and that you will make a way where there is no other way. There is no doubt in my mind that there is someone in this room that needed to hear this today. And as you speak loudly, God, during this reflection song, would you help us remember we can stand on the rock because the rock is immovable. God, we pray through the baskets that are on this stage that your word has been provided. If anyone did not get a word from you this weekend, they can come in and put their hand in these baskets and they can get one right now. And that you would speak loudly. You would ordain the very page of scripture that touches a hand and you would speak loudly into their lives. Help us to keep our eyes on you, to stay focused, to find us faithful, God, to ask for your favor and remember your hand is always working. In Jesus' name, the church said, amen.